What's going on, Curiosity Builders? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, visionaries, and changemakers who are on a mission of chasing big ideas, telling epic stories, and leaving living legacies. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative and curious life for some time, I hope you'll learn something new in this podcast and find yourself inspired to break through the barriers that hold you back and keep you stuck from getting your work to work. What do you do when you feel lost on your creative journey? You do what today's guest does. Continue exploring the great unknown. Alicia Colon is a paper illustrator, tactile artist, and entrepreneur. She is the first person who comes to mind when I think of an artist constantly reinventing who they are and sharing the struggles and successes along the way. In this conversation, Alicia uses her brave voice of transparency and authenticity to talk about the sustainability of art and business. She talks candidly about burnout and how the freelance life affects not just herself, but those around her. We then soar into the silver clouds of exploration, talking about visual analogies, curiosity, passion, and the power of personal declarations. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/525. Alicia, it's been 4 years since our last conversation on Getting Work to Work. I think you were actually one of the first people that I interviewed that I didn't know.
Which I didn't. You played that off so well. So if that was the case, I had no idea.
Yeah, I think my heart was probably like beating in the back of my throat. I was incredibly nervous, but you did something that actually changed how I think about interviews when we had our interview. And I share this story with everyone. And I just wanted to tell you that when you told me, can you turn on the camera so that we can actually see each other? That was such a pivotal moment that changed everything. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, I don't understand how people do Zooms without like, I don't even know how to have like regular phone conversations anymore. Like I end up just talking on top of the other person and I don't mean to do it. So being able to see like, oh, they want to say something.
Yeah, exactly. What's like, even to this day, I still do primarily audio only interviews, except for people that I know it would really mean something to them to like see each other. So I didn't even send you the Zencastr link. I totally just sent the Zoom information.
You knew.
I just knew.
That's perfect.
but it's such a, it is so amazing because I'm just so grateful for the way that you showed up then and the way that you've shown up the last 4 years. And I can't wait to talk about that. So thank you for being here again.
Goodness, I think I'm going to get emotional. We haven't even started yet. Goodness. Well, thank you, Chris. That's really meaningful. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, the question that I've been asking everyone the past probably year and a half now is something that I'm curious about. And it's, what are you endlessly curious about?
So that's your, I feel like your curiosity is cheating because it piggybacks on everybody else's.
Exactly. Oh, it's all cheating. Yeah. That's the secret I've learned in 4 years since we last talked of the podcasting world is that you totally milk your guests for all that they have.
Oh man, there you go. So the thing that I'm endlessly curious about is curiosity. Aha.
Conversation over. We're done.
No, but like, so for me, and it's actually part of a workshop that I do is how curiosity will fulfill your passion. So like, I believe that everyone has a passion, right? Everyone has like that kind of imbued and like developed with inside them. And what ends up happening is that we look at our passion for direction, right? And I'm like, well, passion is more like broad strokes. When you think about a paintbrush, it kind of gives like a big understanding as to like what it's going to be, what tones are going to be used, maybe even like light, who knows? But like, it's really the fine details of curiosity, the fine brush strokes of curiosity that kind of paints that picture. And what I've noticed that after 15 years of like in the creative community, changing my career over and over again because of what I'm curious about, I've seen where all of those things kind of get connected. And now I'm doing something that I really appreciate and I love, and it fulfills me on a deeper level. Now, whether or not it fills the the coin purse, that's completely different. And that's another conversation. But I can definitely say that it's curiosity itself is what the thing I'm curious about, because I'm wondering, like, what is the next thing that I'm going to explore and experiment?
Yeah, that's really fascinating. And I like that you described it as a passion. Everyone has a unique passion, as opposed to purpose, which is the other kind of popular word to describe our unique drive in this world.
Right. I see them as like, they're cousins. They're similar, but they're still very different.
I like that. I like to, because as you describe that, I can start seeing that kind of underlying passion and how they connect in all the things that I do. So for example, I actually love talking with people and interviewing them. And so that's perfect for pretty much everything that I do. So yeah. I like that that could be the passion that connects all this stuff through. So that's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah. So in our past conversation 4 years ago, you called yourself a craftsy photographer. So how do you define yourself now? Now that you've established curiosity and reinvention.
Right. Yeah. So that's really fun. So it's really fun that I called myself a crafty photographer, because I think we were actually, before we even started recording this, we were trying to figure out, like, really in the career hops, where did our 4 year ago interview land? And I think it was when I was about to leave Focus Lab and I was about to start this world of paper stuff. And I didn't know what to call myself. And so I ended up going into paper illustrator, and that ended up sticking, which was really good. And because one of the things that I realized is that as long as you use a term and you use it enough, people are like, oh yeah, that's what she is. You know, right. They completely adopt it. And I'm like, yeah. And sometimes people will be like, what is a paper illustrator? I'm like, I make shapes out of paper and photograph them. But now it has emerged to be more, or evolved to be more of, I call myself a tactile artist or a tactile illustrator. And largely because my scope now is beyond just paper. Paper illustration worked for a really good window. But now it's like, I'll bring in resin or fur or wood or like whatever it is that I need to, in order to create whatever I'm creating. So I don't want to be pinned down as just paper.
That's really interesting. When did you get the idea that it didn't have to just be paper? It could be any like physical structure or physical specimen?
Medium? Yeah, thing. So Adobe paid for me to live stream on Behance for a number of hours per month. And in doing so, what happened is that I would create things and I kind of realized that, like, I realized, like, man, I really want to create this like droopy thing, or I want to create a perfect circle, but I don't want to do it on paper because then it has to be low polygonal, right? And so then I just slowly started adding styrofoam and foam clay, because foam clay is so dope. Cosplayers use it a lot to kind of create costumes and whatnot, but foam clay, you can mold it just like regular clay. You don't have to bake it. It air dries, but then you can Dremel it and you can sand it.
You can Dremel it? What is?
Yeah, Dremel, like with a little like, you know.
Okay.
Little, yeah. The sound was what gave it away, wasn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Because that's all I gave you. Oh, that's funny. So you can shape it really well. You can, you know, prime and paint it. And so anyway, so at that point I'm like, so it's really funny if anybody goes back to, like, cause you can see all those past videos, is that you'll see me like, I'm like, I'm a paper illustrator. No, I'm a tactile artist. No, I don't know what I am today, but we're making stuff, you know? So right now at this juncture, I've just landed at a tactile artist, because it kind of is a more holistic, depending upon who I talk to as well. Because there are some people that I just tell them that I'm a paper engineer, because they're like, they don't understand anything. And so I'm like, I just make shapes out of paper, and that's all you need to know. And they're like, yeah. Okay.
That's so interesting. It's so the struggle of creative people, you know, how do you describe what you do, especially if you do have obscure or multiple interests.
Right, right. And at that point, I just realized that you tailor it to your audience, you know? So it's like whenever I go, so I'm going to thankful that I'm going to Creative Works in Memphis, Tennessee in October. It's the, like one of the first design conferences in person. It's like, yes. I'm so excited. You know, I won't be really saying that I'm a tactile artist over there, and I won't be saying that I'm a paper engineer. I'll probably end up saying that I'm a paper illustrator because that's what they know already. And I don't need to change it for them, you know, because it's important for getting gigs is to kind of keep in the same swim lane, you know, like, so people know where you're swimming so they can come get you.
Right. What that has to be challenging too, when you are such a curious person and you are so, let's call it brave and courageous to reinvent and not get stuck in the same pool or the same lane that you want to be in your whole career, your whole life.
Dude, it's really scary. Cause it's like, I mean, I'm knocking on the door of 40 and I'm thinking like, man, if I had to get like a regular full-time job, what would I do? You know, cause it's like, I've been a designer. I still design like I have three businesses. Like I've done all the packaging for them and all the, you know, the websites and the brands and, you know, all that stuff. So it's like, I still employ those skills, but then at the same time, it's like, but I'm also a photographer, you know? So it's like, I can photograph the crap out of people and like re-Photoshop all of it, you know, and like, you know, nail it. And then I could make, you know, a paper bust of them if I really wanted to, like, like what do I do? And it's so at that juncture, I'm like, so having many hats, while it's really cool and you can see where they all kind of interconnect and you can do some really dope things together, right? Which is why it's easy to have a couple of different businesses. It's horrible when you're trying to figure out how to leave the freelance world and figure out like where would you be most suited in? So it's kind of a double-edged sword that I didn't realize, but I think I probably should have. So, cause like right now it's like, if I wanted to re-enter into agency life, I don't necessarily know how I could do that. If I wanted to re-enter the design world, I don't necessarily know how I would do that because normally people my age, right, they're design directors or creative directors. And it's like, would I be a junior designer? Like, I don't know.
And there's probably not a lot of people talking about it from that perspective.
I know of people who have been designers all of their life. And then they hit my age or they hit like mid 30s and they realize, you know what? I really want to be a baker. And then they put down the art band, like the, you know, the art boards, and they end up being like phenomenal bakers. Like there's this one girl particular that I'm thinking of specifically. She's up in Atlanta and she's killing it. She has like a bakery. She has people working for her. Like, and because she knows design really well, of course, all of her stuff is on point. But I've also, I mean, I saw like a random Twitter, you know, person who was like, you know, after 13 or 14 years in tech, I'm retiring and I'm going to go do this thing. And it's like so random. And then, you know, Ben Stafford, he's another good example of someone who's been in the design like industry for such a long time. He's still probably going to be freelancing, but he's teaching now, right? And then I like, there's another buddy of mine who also was a designer for a really, really long time, and he's teaching now, you know. And so anyway, so I see a lot of people getting out, you know what I mean? But at the same time, I still see people getting in too. So it's a very fluid industry, that's for sure. I just don't know where the heck I've been in.
I can so relate to that journey of like wanting to get out, because that was, I think, for probably the last maybe 4 years has been my journey from escaping the freelance world and realizing that over the last year, it's been like, you know, I actually really like it, even though it's uncertain as you know what, and scary. Yeah. And yet it's just, I can't see myself in any other place now.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's, I don't know if I'm there. I think I'm getting towards the end of being burnt out, honestly, of freelance world. But at the same time, it's one of those where it's like, I have 2 months
I kind of give myself like I have 2 months, and that's my 2 months is largely because that's the amount of money I have in my bank account. Right. So it's not like I always love like you're on a panel or, you know, you're leading a workshop and people are always like, you know, so what's your like timeline that you have to make sure to see if something is going to work or not? I'm like, and I love the like very philosophical answers that people give. Mine is very much like until I run out of money, you know, until I can't do this anymore.
I always thought until you run out of money, and then I ran out of money and I'm just like, in the middle of a pandemic going, okay, now what? And you try to drain absolutely everything. And
so yeah.
It's pretty amazing. The whole notion of there are more options, even in that feeling of until I run out of money.
Yeah. You know, and that, I think that's a really, really good point, because I think what happens is that we kind of start freaking out. Like we see the numbers going down and like maybe we get tunnel vision. You know what I mean? And we let our emotions think for us. And then at that point, that's a really good point of like, you know, there's always way more options than you think will be.
But you also bring up a really good point of just like, it's not only our emotions, but there's other people in play around us that also affect how we feel about something. So like, you know, I'm married, my wife has feelings about this freelance world, you know, and your family probably have a way to feel and think about this world as well.
Right. Right. And that is very, very true. And it's one of the things where if I end up getting a full-time job somewhere, there's a cost there. Right. I mean, like, yeah, sure. I'm making money. Yeah. Maybe I'm like because I use the analogy of like campfires. I'm like, I have all of these like creative campfires and they're all kind of like just barely smoking, right? They're still lit. They're still there, but like none of them are blazing. And so I told Desmond, my husband, I'm like, I don't know which one to stoke. Like, I don't know which one to put more fuel on and to really focus on and let the other ones die out. Like, you know, so while I get something, you know, while I put the wood on the fire, focus on that, end up getting a job in that, whatever that is, there's a cost, you know, on the other side of that. And is it worth it? Yeah. Obviously that's a personal choice for anybody in that situation. Mm-hmm.
Well, and you brought up a really interesting point earlier too, of when burnout is a factor that also colors and, you know, it also affects all of the decisions that you make as well, because you're making them from a completely depleted point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 And I think burnout happens when we put so much value and significance on something that is supposed to pay out and it doesn't pay out. You yes. know what I mean?
That is the best definition of burnout I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's because it's like, I mean, I've never had creative burnout. Never. I've been in the creative industry for, you know, 15 years. And it's just because I think I was always curious. I always turned from here to here to here to here to here to here. And so it's like I never got like, I mean, I got bored with the medium, which is why I ended up going somewhere else, right? But I wouldn't call that burnout, you know what I mean? So, and I didn't get burnout during friggin' the pandemic. And maybe because I had the hours from Adobe, and so I was always like, I had that in my back pocket. I knew that I was going to be making some money somehow, because and I could make whatever the heck I wanted. So like that, and it's like, so that never happened. It happened within these last 3 months when I was making and I was making and I was sharing and it was like nothing was reciprocating, you know, like I was hired to do some discovery. I ended up doing some, you know, artwork and the client super loved it, but at the same time, it wasn't a fit for their brand, which I totally understand, twice. And it was like, okay. So when you start getting defeated like that, And then you're still sharing. And then, and at that point you wonder, like, am I antiquated? Like, has my skill set, like, it was super cool because it was new and it was a novelty. Is it not a novel? Like, is it over that? And I knew, and I, this is probably bad to say, but I knew that I was probably hitting a trend that was a very niche trend and that it was going to have an end date. And I say that with the caveat of that there are some people who are in the paper illustration game. They do stop motion as well. Tommy Perez is one who comes to mind, who I feel like could retire from this. Like he's killing it. He's doing really good. And he continually gets leads and clients from my perspective. I don't know Tommy very well. I never really have personal conversations with them. So all of this is really conjecture. It's what I, from an outsider looking, you know, and it looks like he's always really, really busy. There's some other paper crafters or paper illustrators that are amazing as well. And I see them killing it. I see them being too busy to be able to even like continue to post on social. I am not that person. I am not that person. So I'm wondering, like, did I rise at the beginning of this really cool trend? And now it's towards the end of it and it's not going to pay anything for me anymore? Do I need to move on? I don't know really where I'm at, which is really, it's just such an interesting place to be right now, which is why, yeah. Like, I don't think I really have any wisdom whatsoever to share with anybody right now, but more of a like, hey, if you feel kind of lost in your creative journey, mm-hmm. I'm there with you. And yeah. I know that it's a season and I know it's not permanent because I know I've lived long enough and I've gone through enough crazy things to realize that, like, while it feels permanent right now, I know it's not. It's mm-hmm. just more of a, like, gotta keep swimming, as Dory says, you know, like, just gotta keep swimming.
That has to be the most wisest position to be operating from too, because it would be one thing if you're positioning yourself as you have all these answers, even though, you know, in a sense, you know, the emperor has no clothes, right. But here you are, you know, you're asking these deep philosophical existential questions in a way that not only helps you, but is honest with other people. I think that's admirable. And I think that is wise.
Yeah. I mean, we're human and we are all going through something, you know what I mean? And it's like, I think one of, and this, I am probably like throwing your questions like completely out of order, but like one of your questions is like, why are you so honest or something like that? I don't have a huge following. I don't have, I, you know, some people know me. And one of the things that like, I want to be is real, because I know that real people, they're real on the other side. You know what I mean? And it's like, there's so many people out there that like, they want to look like they're always operating from a place of security and confidence and success. And that's not anybody all the time. It's not. And so at that point, it's like, we need those brave voices to be transparent and to be vulnerable and be like, hey, that's just how it is. Now there's a fine line. Because then you can end up playing, you know, like you can use it as like a victim, you know what I mean? Oh, right. Look at me, you know, and that's not the point either. So there's definitely a fine line. But my big thing is like, I just want people to know that if they're struggling like this, it's they're not alone.
How do you identify that line and know when you've either crossed it or you're about to cross it?
That's a really good question. And I feel like your podcast will be filled with 5 minutes of silence while I think the answer of that one.
Oh, don't worry. I edit out silence.
If I am trying to play the victim, then at that point I'm focusing on it. And then at that point that ends up becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, because that's the thing that I'm focusing on, right? And so because I know that where your thoughts lead your footsteps, I guess I don't even really think about saying it too much, because I generally don't I don't try to dwell on it. You know, it's like I'm one of those where it's like I will acknowledge it. That's okay. And then I will move on. And not to get too into this, but like One of the things that I really love to do is visual analogies. I have been in church for a really super long time since college, and I've worked with students for 18 years. I've worked with students for a long, long time. And one of the things that I have realized is that like visual analogies are just an amazing teaching tool. And so one of the things that I did with my daughter is, and this definitely has a point, so hang with me, is one day my daughter was like crying about how much studying she had to do. And it was like, oh my gosh, like, okay, let's pause here and let's have a moment. So I went and I had like whole coffee beans. And so I grabbed like 10 coffee beans and I said, all right, this is the amount of energy you have on any given day. Sometimes you might have 11 coffee beans because you slept really, really good. And sometimes you might have 8 coffee beans that day, but relatively on average, you have 10. Now, you're crying right now. That is taking up some of your coffee beans, believe it or not, right? I was like, so you could either take that energy that you have and apply it towards your studying and actually still have energy left over to do whatever you want to do. Or you can sit here and you can cry about it, lose some of your coffee beans, still get the studying done that you need to do, and then not have any energy to do anything afterwards. So it's your coffee bean. I'm just telling you, maybe one way is a little bit better than the other, you know? And so with that analogy, that's like, I look at my life like that. Like I look like, okay, I can sit here and I can be really sad and I can like super hyper focus on the fact that like my money is like dwindling and I don't necessarily have staying power. Or I can go, I am going to acknowledge that truth because that is a true number. I'm going to acknowledge that truth. And then I'm going to use the rest of my coffee beans to do things that are productive in order to help me change that.
That's powerful.
Coffee beans, man.
Yeah. Coffee does help, doesn't it? But I really do like that focus on visual analogies too, because, you know, when you shared recently the picture of your jar and being so honest about, you know, that the jar isn't filling. It really was that visual analogy of just like, you know, we can conceptualize something like that and be like, you know, looking at it from a website perspective, or, you know, like, yeah, I have like my little filled notes, you know, my check register, but when you see it as a jar, I think it does something differently than anything else.
Yeah. I really like my jar, and it's tempting to look at my jar and to see the part that's empty, and the part that's empty represents the money that I don't have. But I think the thing about my jar that's really neat, and perhaps maybe that's why I really like about it, except for this part on top, is that since I deal with paper and paper illustration, these little scraps here are from the projects that I worked on ended up, you know, providing the money that I have in this jar. So it's kind of like, yeah, while I wish this was full, it's like, I did something. Like I did do something. There's proof right there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely more of a, you know, cup is half full mentality, but you have to have that.
What's interesting, when I look at your work, the paper illustrations that you do, or even the phrase that you use, functional art, I really get a sense that there's like meditation and peace when I look at your work. Like it just fills me with that sense of just like, and so I'm curious what's going through your mind as you bring your imagination to life.
Let's see. So the paper illustration and the functional art are two different themes. And so the functional art right now, that's just a new thing that I've been doing within this last month. It's resin, essentially. And with that, I wanted to create something that had no brand strategy, that had no communication strategy, that had no creative brief or project scope, that was quite literally me enjoying color and form and texture. And so with that, I ended up creating like bookmarks and phone holders and tons of bag charms and zipper pulls and things like that. So what's going through my mind in that is just like little tiny canvases, just exploration and just enjoying beauty for beauty's sake, which is actually probably one of the first times that I've ever done that. Like, before I was so pragmatic about my art that it had to have a reason. It's like, I can't create stuff if it doesn't have a reason. And it's like, now I really quite literally have no reason. I'm just creating. So it's kind of cool to walk in that for the first time ever. The paper illustration, I think what's happening there is that it's just joy and imagination. Cause it's like, how many times do you can, you know, you get to, like right now I get to make a woodland neighborhood for Compassion International. I've been doing that for, oh gosh, almost all year. So I have, they bought 4 sets from me. I have 3 sets that I've done. And so now we're going to do the 4th one here soon.
That's amazing.
And it's so fun. And it's like, you know, we have these characters that live in this little neighborhood that, like, you know, again, nobody at home can see, but it's like right there in the upper corner. That's where they live right there. I'm going to miss them. Like, I have this point, I have names, but they have personalities. Yes. Oh, and so I'm going to miss them a lot. So anyway, it's just joy and fun and imagination. And it's just escaping the world and being, you know, going into this perfect land.
I like that. There's definitely that storytelling component to your work, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. I like it a lot.
So what's interesting is when you talk about the functional art and just creating something that doesn't have a strategy or even a reason to exist, how do you think that affects your burnout?
Dude, it's a danged if you do, danged if you don't kind of thing, because it costs money. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like creating digital collages or creating 3D rooms, which are really super cool, that really only cost electricity and time. You know, this stuff, it's like it costs, because I like to make stuff. Like, I get out of the screen and I like to make things. And so it's a completely different, costly, expensive habit to have. So on one hand, I super love it. On the other hand, I'm like, I really got to now sell these things in order to to pay my habit, to support my habit, which I have. So then at that point, it's been really fun because I have creatives that I adore and they are, you know, just buying little keychains and, or, you know, the bag charms and the bookmarks. And it's like, so I have all these like artist friends out there that have my art. And I never thought that would happen. Like, I always thought that I would make a cool like paper pirate ship and I would print that on, you know, a print and somebody would have that in their baby room or something, right. You know? So it's like to not even be paper and people are buying it, like, it's kind of so weird for me, but it's freeing because it's like, they are connecting with my art, not necessarily who I am or, you know, whatever. It's just my art. And that's really cool.
That is cool. And I like too, that it, in a way it gives, There's a certain thing with business where you want to like completely test the idea and perfect it before you launch, but then you can like put something out there and see what happens. And it reminds you of just how much unknown, how many things are just unknown, that we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to resonate. So why not just test it? Why not throw it out there and see what happens?
I think that's why. I have 3 businesses right now. Right. And so one of them is the resin art, which I use that word so lightly. I wouldn't necessarily call it a business, but I am like selling them. So, but not to like support me, you know, or pay my bills or whatever. And then I have Unstationery, which I'm sure we'll talk about. And then we have, you know, my studio, which is the paper illustration. But the thing is with Unstationery, it's like I have been doing market after market after market after market, you know, like locally here in Savannah. And I've finally have kind of gotten to the point where it's like Unstationery probably doesn't need to be at markets, maybe. I don't know. But I still love markets. Like, it's exactly what you're talking about with the great unknown. Like, you have no idea. So like I'm driving to, like, the night before, I can never sleep because I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know who my neighbors are going to be. I've always had some really cool neighbors, and like maker neighbors are like the best. Cause like, I don't know, like we talk about like, you know, our maker journeys and our woes and like whatever, you never know who you're going to be with. You never know what's going to resonate with your audience. You never know, like, if it's going to be an amazing day where you're bringing in like $1,000 or like you just barely paid you just broke even. Like the amount that I paid for my booth and my gas and all that stuff and how much I sold, it was just an even day. But I still get to meet all these people.
Yeah.
It sounds like introverts would absolutely hate that. But I'm like, let's go do it. And it's so fun. So I told my husband, I was like, you know what, even if Instationary ends up like only becoming and, you know, only gets sold in retail stores, like I would still have something I would make to go to markets because they're so freaking fun. Like, yeah. I just love them.
So where did the idea for Unstationery come from? You call them teachable moment craft kits.
Yes. Yeah. So Unstationery was launched in 2019, and it was going back to what I was talking about earlier, kind of giving a nod to it, but trying not to, like, you know, segue too early. Again, I love the visual analogies. And with my kids, so I have three kids, and I also worked with students. Specifically with my kids, what I found is that, like, man, visual analogies are just the way to really drive home a point, have them remember it. And then I can recall it, right? I can kind of like bring it back out of the closet. And then you kind of pair that with, like, you know what? I'm also this is where I end up using the word paper engineer, because people come and ask me all the time at markets. You know, if I do Unstationery, they're like, what's your full-time job? And I just tell them I'm a paper engineer. Cause then at that point, like, it works, right? With the narrative. So what I realized is that, you know what, I could pair these things. Like, I could have, so a good example, one of my favorite examples is, I have a lot of favorite examples, but the easiest one I think is the palm tree. A palm tree is one of the most flexible trees in the world, which is why they can withstand hurricane force winds, right? They are very malleable. So because of that, what better thing to use as a visual analogy when we need to talk about being flexible in circumstances? When things don't go the way that you want, like, let's talk about a palm tree. Let's see what we can learn from a palm tree. And so with that one, we end up starting in a very concrete understanding of what flexibility is, because when you're working with kids, like, you have to understand their perspective and their aptitude to understand really what you're talking about, right? So when you talk about flexibility to a 6-year-old, we're like, yeah, I can touch my toes. And we're like, that's not what we're talking about here, you know? So, but you start there and you end up going into the more abstract, and then we end up leaving them with an acrostic at the very end that the parents can then use later on in order to kind of help calm nerves. And so anyway, all of the kits have instructions on how to put them together, but they have questions embedded in it that as a parent, you would be able to do it with your kid, or as a teenager, you could do it solo on your own. Mm-hmm. And so that's the whole thing, is that as you put this craft together, you're going to be going over a topic, and the topic absolutely goes with or is in relationship to the object that you're creating.
That is so cool.
I like it a lot. I do. I mean, I really do. So, like, for instance, my middle daughter is going into sixth grade. From the studies that I have seen, it's the first time that kids become hyper aware of what other people think about them.
Oh, wow.
Right. Like, so, and that generally speaking, their confidence level goes down. So, like, it's crazy, because it's like they like this whole study. Right. And I mean, I'm in middle school ministry right now, so, like, I'm super hypersensitive to all this stuff. So it's like, so as a kid is going through elementary, it's like their confidence level is, like, really, really high. But once they get to sixth grade, it, like, freaking plummets. And it doesn't get as high as it was in elementary school until they're in their 20s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it takes that long. So it's like they are just, like, kind of steadily going, you know, and they're, you know, it's kind of like there's pitfalls every once in a while. And so we have a hot air balloon, and the hot air balloon talks about uplifting words, and specifically it helps the kid recall positive things other people have said about them that resonates with them, that they really love, right? And I'm like, what better time to do, you know, like, that particular paper craft with your kid during the summer before they go into sixth grade. And so anyway, so I keep telling Ava, I'm like, Ava, we're going to do the hot air balloon. And she's like, Mom, like, the instructions work. I promise. I'm like, no, I'm not, you're not testing it. You're not a guinea pig. Well, do we need to do photos? No, it's not for photos. It's just because I'm your mom and I think it'd be good for us to do it.
Right. Well, it's funny. It's a really good example of how sometimes the art that we do can actually heal us if we let it, even though we've like developed something for someone else. If we go back and do it for ourselves, it's amazing what we would learn.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm really biased, obviously, but I think that what ends up happening, so right now I'm writing a book. Well, I already wrote the book. A kid's book about is a publisher, and they have started a board book series for preschoolers about a little book about. And what I love about this publisher is that they are addressing heavy hitting topics. So suicide, adoption, divorce, God, activism, white supremacy. I don't think, was it white supremacy one? Maybe it's privilege, but like heavy, heavy hitting, like, you know, very cool. So they asked me to write a book with them. And so I'm doing that. But the reason why I bring it up is that they and Unstationary believe in the same ethos of like, we need to talk to kids more. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think it's because we grew up in the generation where like we came home from elementary school with a key around our neck and we pretty much like we let ourselves in, we cooked for ourselves, you know, like we did our homework. Mm-hmm. And it's like we never really sat down, or I never really sat down and had like a really deep conversation, you know, growing up, because my parents were too busy like providing or going to school or, you know, doing the things that they needed to do in order to support us. And I think so now what ends up happening is that now we want to equip our kids a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Right. And so like, this is the unique way that I can help people equip their kids. But at the same time, what I'm noticing is that some adults still don't know these lessons that we're trying to teach their kids. And so what I'm hoping is like, what if the mom buys it in order to do it with the kid? And then what ends up happening is that they both learn together.
That's awesome.
That's the hope. And we'll see if that actually happens, but that's the goal.
Have you heard any fun stories about people who have bought the kits and made them with their kids?
No, not yet, which is kind of frustrating. It's a little frustrating. I've gotten people that are surprised. It's like they bought the kits and they didn't realize that there were questions in there. They're like, oh, there's questions in here. That's cool. And that was it. That's really about it. So we're still at the very early ages of this. So like one of the things that I heard a long time ago is that if you're not embarrassed by your first prototype, you're not doing your product right. And so the amount of iterations that this product has been through already is kind of crazy. So so I would say framing it as a teachable moment craft kit, really kind of honing in as to like what this is and who it is for and why it is for them is actually really new. And we haven't even been able to get that out yet to be able to like see if that is resonating.
You're full of examples on, you know, just the realities of things. And I think the sense of iteration and the importance of iteration in all aspects of business is so important.
Yeah.
And it's the one we don't want to honestly deal with. I don't want to deal with iteration, but seriously, iteration is the most powerful thing that you can do with your business.
Yeah. Well, and that's the sad thing about people wanting to wait until it's perfect to launch. Mm-hmm. It will never be perfect. And the problem is that they're not going to get the information that they need to inform whatever pivot they need to do until they get the stuff out. It's not going to happen. So they're kind of in this like, well, you're just not going anywhere for a really long time, because if you're waiting until it's perfect, the only information you're operating off of is probably what you have between you, yourself, and I. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to go far.
No, not at all. And if there's anything that spends your coffee beans more than anything else, it's perfection.
It is. That's not the way I want to use my coffee beans.
No, not at all.
Get that thing out.
Oof.
Yeah.
One of the things that was really fascinating, Alicia, was you went through a journey with NFTs. And I was so intrigued by that because I didn't really know much about it. So I was just living vicariously through your experiment. But it was, I mean, that's a really interesting example of your willingness to try things.
Yeah.
And what did you learn from that experiment?
NFTs are really, really good if you already have a really large following or if you end up planning it and hyping it up a lot. So for me, the amount of energy that I wanted to get into, you know, creating NFTs didn't really work very well for me. But what I did learn was how to animate my paper stuff smoothly. So there's always a silver cloud, right? Like, and that's why I love exploration. So regardless if I end up like going into the world of NFTs for like the next 5 years, or if I'm in it for the next 5 weeks or 5 days, I do learn something. And so I finally kind of had a miniature breakthrough of how I like to animate my paper stuff, because I ended up doing a lot of little tiny animations of my paper stuff and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it is interesting. That's kind of been a recurring theme of witnessing and seeing those silver linings. Does that mindset come naturally to you, or was that something that you had to learn through this journey?
Oh, I had to learn it. Absolutely had to learn it. And the thing is that I think there's a lot of my faith that drives that. So I don't necessarily want to, you know, to respect other people. But for me, it's like, if I didn't have a faith that there's somebody bigger and that there's someone who's fighting whenever I'm resting, who is ultimately my provider, I think at that point, like I wouldn't have the mentality that I do. But that doesn't mean that there wasn't a lot of work on my part that had to be done. So I realized that like I still had some fixed mindset thing. So like there is a time where I realized like I thought I was too old, or I thought like, oh, I'm not good at math, so why try this, or I'm not good enough or anything like that. And then I realized that, you know, what has to happen is that my personal declarations to myself need to be more intentional instead of whatever kind of like happens. Mm-hmm. And that's also one of those providential things where it's like I was going through this really rough time with my self-talk, but I didn't know that's what it was. And then I ended up hearing a message, and then I ended up hearing another message, and then I ended up having this book resource and then this book resource. And I ended up, you know, reading and gobbling all this information and ended up coming up with an action plan through all of that. And then had the battle ring, if you will, to do the action plan. And then over the course of years, that has now been like 4 or 5 years ago. Now it's like, I don't have to do those actions, you know, daily in order, like the personal declarations. I don't have to do those daily. But if there is a particular thing that I'm struggling with, what will end up happening is that I will create personal declarations specifically to that. So like there was a time where like I thought I wasn't a good friend. And it's like, so if I'm keep telling myself that I'm not a good friend in my head, well, I definitely won't be a good friend because that's the thing I'm focusing on. So instead, like I would say, like, I can be there for people, you know, I love people, and I will be compassionate, and I will put them first, and you know what I mean? Like, and I quite literally would just say these things out loud to myself, and it sounds so stupid, but it's one of those things where it's like, because I have been through it in the past and I know the power of that, I was willing to do it again. So, I mean, I've done it with, I'm not good enough. I've done it with, a parent, like I can be a good mom, I can be empathetic, I can be compassionate, I can slow down, I can have grace. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I've done that. And I've also done it with the business, you know, with like I will get through this, like I, you know, all this stuff. So anyway, so at this point it's old hat, but it works. And so I can always go back to it.
I like that you called it personal declaration, because I hadn't heard it described that way. And I like that a lot, because a declaration could be positive or negative. And I know for myself, it's more often negative than positive.
Right.
And it's funny because like, as you were talking about these declarations, the most recent one that really messed up my head for a little bit was I literally told myself I was not a blue sky thinker, because I wasn't able to respond a certain way to a client's brief. And so I started telling this declaration to myself of like, I'm not this blue sky thinker. And over the course of probably 8 months now, I realized just what a lie that was. And so I had to like rewrite the personal declaration and then bring the proof of like what I've done.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, it's so powerful what we can tell ourselves, good or bad.
It is. Yeah. And it's the narrative. I mean, like I remember, and this is close to the subject. So there was this time where I was a young girl and I was being very manipulated by these other girls, right? And that kind of shaped, like I was thinking, so what ended up happening is that they would always invite each other and it was like, oh yeah, you too, Leisha. You know what I mean? And it everything from like Christmas presents to like sleepovers to, you know, getting out of class, like whatever. It was like, I was always the last one or I never was really invited, but I always considered them like my really good friends. And I use that example as a, you're not a good friend or you're not friend material. And then it was through a lot of journaling. I journal a lot of prayer. And I feel like one day God was like, look at the other side of that. And then I looked at the other side and I'm like, I was a little girl who gave her heart, who was generous, who was strong, who was brave, who was loyal. I was a good friend. I was a good friend. And then at that point, I'm like, I was a good friend. Like, I can be a friend. And then at that point, like, it has changed. And it's like, how many things do we all have in our life that like we've always looked on the dark, the shadow of it, right? And we interpreted the whole entire scenario based upon the shadow. And it's like, that's actually not the truth whatsoever at all, because it has a hold on us, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like this whole thing with like business now and work now and all that. I'm like, okay, am I staring at the shadow? That's kind of like, that's the question that I always kind of go back at. It's like, what side am I looking at?
Which is a incredibly powerful question, especially when you're in the shadow, when you can't see the sun shining through the darkness. And so I'd be curious to see how you start to rewrite some of those personal declarations to allow you to like start, you know, scraping off the the darkness on the window so the light can come in.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting, because I think there's humbling that's happening, and I think that there's identity things that are shifting, and it's all really tragically beautiful in a way, because it's like, you know, it's things that need to be purged and redefined and cleaned up. And so I'm excited, but no one likes to be in this refining period. It's not a comfortable place, but that's where I'm at and I'm okay with it.
Yeah. The phrase refiner's fire or the refining fire popped into my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. It's not, you know, but it's, I mean, that's how they do silver, right? It's like they put it in the fire. And I think it's like, I don't know how many times, Chris, you might know. I think it's like 5 times or whatever, but they keep putting in the fire. They take the impurities out. They keep putting it in fire and, you know, eventually get to the point where you can see your reflection in it. Mm. And it's, that's exactly kind of like how I feel right now, is that like, all right, I'm in the fire. Like there's something there that's being burnt off. That's cool. And, you know, as long as I can be a better reflection of who I'm meant to be, you know, who I was made to be and who made me, I'm good.
Such an insightful mindset. I just really appreciate that.
You're very kind.
I just know what it's like to be stuck in your head. I mean, if we did this interview last week, it would have been an entirely different conversation, because, you know, I was in that place of just like feeling the darkness surrounding me.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate that we're having the conversation this week.
Yeah. You probably did not expect such like the topics. Like what I was like.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic, because it's honest and it's real. And I think, you know, as I mentioned, I th- whether it was before we hit record or at the very beginning, I just really appreciate that realness and willingness to share the stuff that isn't, you know, Instagram carousel worthy.
Right. Yeah. It wouldn't be seen by anybody anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, exactly. The negativity floats to the top.
Yeah.
As we kind of wrap up our conversation, thank you so much for just being willing to share and being who you are. And you mentioned that you are a constant reader and journaler, but what book, podcast, or resource is blowing your mind right now?
Oh my gosh. Well, so I have gone through a litany. Is that a word that I wanted to use right now? I've gone through such a variety of books right now, varying topics, everything from business to, you know, to civil and social things. And the thing that for me is I actually met a local author who wrote it's a spiritual book about royalty. So anyway, so that's what's blowing my mind. Probably irrelevant for a lot of people right now, but
oh wow.
For me, yeah, it's like the rules of royalty.
Royalty or loyalty?
Royalty. The rules of royalty.
Ooh, I like that alliteration.
Yeah. So she has me enthralled. So
And what's kind of the premise about it?
So as a person who is a follower of Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. One of the big things is that in the Old Testament, also in the New Testament, but that it's a royal priesthood. Like true Christians are not ones to be judgmental, right? Not to be condemning at all. Like the Mother Teresa's of the world is really should be way more prolific, way more, there should be way more of us, way more Mother Teresa's and Mr. Teresa's, like an amazing amount. She's a true example of what a Christian is. It's pretty much like how we do that. And that's kind of like the heart that I have that I feel like I've lost. Because one of the things that is hurting me is when I am insecure from a financial standpoint, it kills my ability to be empathetic and compassionate for others. It kills my ability to want to be able to or like feel like I could help. Right. Because it's like all of my energy is being used to try to stay afloat, mentally and emotionally, and even financially. And it's one of the reasons why I'm even thinking about like, well, maybe I should get a full-time job. Because then at that point, if I know that, you know, that job quote unquote is secure, which we all know, even full-time jobs aren't necessarily secure. Mm-hmm. But it feels more so. So maybe I would be able to have a larger capacity to serve, which is where we all should be. Is lifting up our, you know, our brothers and sisters, whoever, whatever they look like, whoever they are. So I'm feeding my soul that right now, because it's kind of like I'm preparing my heart, because I really want to be there to serve. And it's like, I'm just not. And I don't like that about myself right now. So.
Wow. That sounds like an amazing book. Yeah. I do agree. We need more Mr. and Mrs. Mr. Mr. and Mother Teresa's out there.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Alicia, thank you so much for coming back, sharing where you're at, being 100% authentic and real. It's so valued by me. And I know that other people really will benefit from this. And I do think that this is a powerful way to serve in a small way, just with where you're at and show it up. So thank you.
Thank you, Chris. That means a lot. Thank you.
It is truly amazing what can happen in a week. On Monday, Alicia and I recorded this conversation, and as you heard, there were a lot of deep questions about her future. And yesterday, she tweeted out that she landed a new job. And so in the span of less than a week, she went from not knowing what was next to having a clear direction. So throw things out there. Whether you have a large following or not, share what you're looking for, be open to the experiences that you're going through, and you'll never know who's paying attention, who's ready to be with you on the next stage of your journey. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.